Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new... Good start.
Can you keep that, please?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Fanning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. Laughing at me is my wife, Bianca Reichert.
Hello.
You want to know why I'm a little off sorts right now,
Bonkert? Because you're gobsmacked by how beautiful I am?
Yes, that was the answer. Also, a secondary reason for being a little off right now is... You know, we watch a lot of wrestling, and if any program on television knows its demographics as far as advertising, wrestling certainly does. You see a lot of fast food stuff. You see some car products.
A lot of low-T products.
A lot of Frank Thomas, the big hurt.
You mean the big hunk.
More like, yeah, he looks like he could still play, right? Just text Clout Able to Nugenics. Outside of that, though, there is a Little Caesar's Pizza. That I have been lusting after for weeks, it seems, right?
I guess. I mean, it's been rough. It's all you talk about.
Well, every time I see the commercial, I lose my mind.
Yeah.
Because they make it look like the most amazing thing. Because if there's one food item I love more than anything, it's cheese. And this thing, not only does it load like three things of cheese on top of the pizza, the sauce is just like nacho cheese. And that
some would say that nacho cheese is a mockery of cheese.
I think nacho cheese is the purest form of food.
Okay, just food, nutrition.
Yes, not even just cheese. It is kind of the top of the line. Okay. And it has a pretzel crust. And so I've been waiting weeks to get this, and I thought I maybe earned it today and have a little cheat day and get my pretzel cheesy pizza.
You said this morning that you wanted an IV drip of nacho cheese. And I told you that no self-respecting doctor would ever provide that service.
I know. That's why I find a Craigslist doctor to do it. But so, long story short, I ordered the pizza after an odyssey of mishaps.
Wait, tell them what happened with the order.
Yeah, I paid for one online. I clicked order online, and I paid for it. And I was like, why isn't there any delivery stuff? Ah, it didn't ask me to specify any delivery instructions. That's weird. Didn't ask me to tip. Turns out I don't think Little Caesars delivers, so I think they made that pizza and it just stayed up in Harlem somewhere and never got delivered.
He tried to call to cancel.
Yes.
And they just never ever picked up.
Yeah. So I had to order another one from Seamless. Anyway, that's a long walk to get to
New York City, a place known, among other things, for its pizza.
Yeah. I mean, you saw that commercial.
Yeah, it was fucking nasty.
Oh, God, it looked amazing. Ugh. But I thought I was going to eat the whole pizza today, and I sat down and I ate it, and the first like two bites were great. And then every bite after that, I started feeling a little worse.
Yeah.
And I'm slightly hungover today, and I thought maybe it would kind of be the cure to what ails me. I just feel worse now.
That's like trying to drink venom to cure yourself. Well, actually, isn't anti-venom made out of snake venom? I was going to say that it's like drinking venom trying to cure yourself of a snake bite. But I actually think anti-venom is made of venom.
Is it like how the flu shot is just giving you a little bit of the flu?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so I don't really have an analogy for this other than to say I'm disappointed.
Oh, well, the short version is I ate a big gross cheese pizza and I don't feel good now.
No.
But it didn't stop me from watching a Netflix show with my wife, which is a thing we do, and then we podcast about it, which is what we're going to do here. Why don't you tell the folks what we watched this week?
Russian Doll.
Yes, if you have a Netflix account, you have probably seen Natasha Lyonne's face staring at you through that icon on the main page for several weeks now. And then I heard from, I didn't know what it was about. I'd only just seen that icon for a long time. And then your friend and mine, Ben Hansen, told me that it was pretty good. And so we watched it, and I don't think I had any idea it was going to be this, like, Groundhog Day type thing, which it is. So Natasha Lyonne plays Nadia, who is like mid-30s. It starts like it's her birthday party, and it's this big, like, very trendy, artsy party she's having and everything. And it's like Groundhog Day, but instead of just repeating everything, it kind of resets the clock when she dies. So the first night is like her getting hit by a taxi, and then it's like, oh, her falling downstairs, and her, you know. It's almost more of a comedy, I feel like, in these first few episodes.
I think it then starts to focus more on what is actually happening, and, you know, there's some comedic moments, but it's more of like a sci-fi kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like the first like maybe three episodes are kind of like, hey, this is, look at this wacky situation. Like, let's look at all the funny things that can happen in a Groundhog Day type thing.
Right.
And then they introduce Alan, who is this other character, and he's pretty much as central of a character.
We're burning through this so quickly. Shouldn't we kind of explain it a little
more? Let's do it. Yeah, jump in.
Well, I was going to say, the first time it happens, she suspects that she's on some kind of drug trip from the weird joint that Maxine, the party host, and her friend provided, which, according to Maxine, was weed laced with cocaine, which is how the Israelis do it, I guess.
Right.
So she's like, well, I shouldn't be tripping so hard. Maybe there's something more in this... in that joint than, you know, Maxine said. So then she undergoes this investigation trying to figure out, you know, first she talks to the drug dealer and then she finds the drug maker and she finds out that it's ketamine and not cocaine.
Oh,
and
was it actually ketamine? Like, they confirmed that it was...
Well, the guy who made...
The doctor guy. Yeah.
He was like, oh, no, it's ketamine. And she, at first, forgot that she had done ketamine before and was like, oh, of course, that's it. That's the explanation. And then she's told that, no, you've done ketamine a bunch of times, and it's not that. So then she starts to suspect, well, the loft, the trendy loft that the party was in this kind of, like, a converted yeshiva school. And that, you know, had been changed into, like, loft apartments. And she suspects, like, maybe it's some kind of spiritual thing. Like, she's getting punished for something, like, a religious kind of thing. And then she goes to the temple, right? And she can't...
Yeah, she talks to that lady who's really shitty to her, and yeah.
Right, who insists that, like, well, she has to... Her husband can talk to the rabbi, but she can't. And so she calls her ex-boyfriend to come pretend like he's the husband. And, you know, it doesn't end well. But ultimately, she figures out that it's not the fact that it was an old school.
Yeah, and so a lot of this early stuff is her kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And I wondered if it was ever going to be a thing that was explicitly explained. Because it's not like, you know, in Groundhog Day, it's not like they ever straight up say, like, oh, here's what happened. You, a wizard put a spell on you, right, and you have to do this. I mean, it's implied that it's like... Oh, you know, this, until he became a better person, that's when the day, you know, went forward.
Yeah, actually, in Groundhog Day, I feel like he never really made a concerted effort to get out of the loop. He kind of resigned himself to it. He didn't know that by being a good person that would get him out of it, but was naturally.
Yeah, was that why he started killing himself? Was because he was like, oh, maybe this will, like, or maybe at the very least this will end this, but mm-hmm. then he kept waking up and he couldn't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is like...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he does try to kill himself to see, but it doesn't work, yeah.
Yeah, this is more her, like, actively seeking out answers, like very just anxiety, you know, just like running around, like, what's going on? I need to figure this out. I need to get out of this.
Right.
And, like, all these theories and stuff, which she's also... So the character, she works for what is definitely supposed to be like a rock star game.
Yeah.
It's called, like, Rock and Roll Games in New York. And the video game stuff is not a large part of the story, really. But every time they do show it, it's just like...
So bad.
Yeah, like early on, the Alan character, who mm-hmm. we'll get to him more in a second, but we see him playing like... He's just playing like the new Tomb Raider, basically. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, that seems like... That's nothing off-putting about that. That's a realistic thing.
Right.
And then, oh my God, she's like looking at a shelf and he's got some games. And she's like, oh, hey, oh, look, I made this game. I designed this game. And they put it in and...
It's like a flash. It's like a Newgrounds level
exactly.
flash game.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It looked like a Newgrounds parody of Braid, like the looks, like just the way it was the animated characters. But I mean, it looked so shitty and not at all modern. And like I've said it before on a million podcasts, but just like if you're gonna go through the trouble of having a video game shown in a movie, mm-hmm. just make it look even somewhat passable by normal standards.
It just goes to show you that no one that was like super into video games had any say in the production of this, because like I feel like, you know, it's kind of out of touch to assume that the people watching it won't notice how you know, it's one thing if it was like a really really niche subject that like only hardcore people would recognize, like, oh, that's such a stupid way, like obviously she doesn't really work in this stuff, but video games, you know, everyone knows video games.
Yeah, I figured like a good chunk of the people watching the show would be like, that's weird. It's like in 40-Year-Old Virgin when Seth Rogen and I think Paul Rudd are playing Mortal Kombat Deception, mm-hmm. and one of them has a Nintendo 64 controller. Ugh. What are we doing here? Or in Pain and Gain, which takes place in like the 80s or early 90s, and there's a GameCube controller on the floor. It just ruins the whole film. Yeah. I'll walk right out. I turned off the TV in a huff when I saw that.
Would that be like a set designer's role to determine what is appropriate for a time and place?
I mean, in the case of something like Pain and Gain, which mm-hmm. is era specific, mm-hmm. I think it would probably be the person whose job it is to like make sure everything is appropriate for the era.
Mm-hmm.
But in something like this, or like 40-Year-Old Virgin, which is set in the modern day,
mm-hmm.
I think that's just a thing where, again, like you said, no one on staff just stepped in and be like, oh, wait, people are going to notice and that's going to be stupid, right. You know? And, like, I'm kidding. It's not actually a giant deal, but it's just one of those things I see and it's like, man, how do you not
it is an,
get
it's
that
like,
better?
Yeah, because you know? Like, you're super, especially for you and me, like, we're both really into video games. And when you see it, it's just like, ah, damn.
Yeah. It's like, this just makes games look stupid.
They just should have had her as, like, a software engineer or something, software programmer, that, like, they could just show text on a screen and, you know, no one would really question
yeah,
it unless
IT
they
or
went close to show the actual code.
Yeah. There's the one meeting we see of her at the Rockstar Games place, and it's like, oh, we need to have an emergency meeting. We can't figure out how to make the character walk. And it's like, I think, okay, sure.
I think I forgot to mention that in the midst of all this, Nadia can't find her cat Oatmeal.
Right.
So that was kind of why she was so distraught that first day. She was looking for Oatmeal, and that's actually how she died the first time. Mm-hmm. She saw Oatmeal across the street.
And this all takes place in the East Village, so it's like Thompson Square Park down there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah so... Yeah, that's just a thing. But then also there's that homeless guy
mm-hmm.
that the first time she sees him, she's like, oh, he looks familiar. And we never really learn for sure why he looks familiar to her.
No.
But she definitely wants to care for him and stuff like that. I read a theory on Reddit that the horse, the guy, and Oatmeal are the same, just in different timelines, because these are the points that this person lists out. Oatmeal is basically only seen in the park, which is where Horse is the guy. Horse has a warm sanctuary in a basement just like Oatmeal does. Otherwise, Horse is outside, and there is a valid reason to worry that he may freeze to death, just as Nadia worries that Oatmeal will. Nadia finds Oatmeal in Horse's arms, and Horse seems to be identifying with Oatmeal, telling her what Oatmeal is thinking. Nadia seems to recognize Horse even in her first loop when she shouldn't know who he is.
Right, because she hasn't done any of the past lives or anything yet.
Right. And then apparently at the end with that parade, they're wearing, all the homeless people that are in the parade are wearing the colors of Oatmeal.
Oh.
I don't know, yeah. It seems like there are a lot of, like, tiny little details in the show that yes. we would probably miss. Like, I wouldn't have noticed that.
I saw that people were mad because Netflix kind of spoiled a thing on their Twitter.
Did they?
They said, like, hey, after you're done watching Russian Doll, go back to episode one and see how many times you see Alan dotted around everywhere.
Mm.
And people were just kind of like, what the fuck? Like, don't tell us that, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like, so the main thing is obviously Nadia and Alan, who is this other guy that we meet.
Also stuck in a loop.
Yeah, they meet in an elevator and he's like kind of calm about like it's breaking and they're about to die. And mm-hmm. he's like, oh yeah, I die all the time too. Mm-hmm. And then they meet up. So that's the core of the eight episodes here, which it's eight episodes. It's 30 minutes long each. It's a pretty breezy show for sure. And the crux of it is definitely Alan and Nadia trying to figure out what's going on and getting to know each other and, mm-hmm. and learning how their days intertwine and everything.
Right.
But there are a lot of things in that orbit. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's Horse, the homeless guy. You know, Oatmeal's involved. There are these two dudes. One of them is Nadia kind of broke up his marriage, basically. Right. And then there's this other guy that just kind of sleeps around with everyone, including Alan's girlfriend, who he wants to propose to.
Right.
And a little background on Alan here. So he is just like this obsessive perfectionist, you know, kind of neat freak, just always... It's like a nice version of Patrick Bateman, where it's like everything is perfectly clean. He's constantly doing sit-ups and shit, and everything has to be perfectly right. And just seems kind of obsessive and... I don't know, doesn't seem happy.
Seems to be really worried about how he's being perceived.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Seems, yeah, very not happy.
Yeah, and so a lot of the show is about these two characters kind of confronting, I guess, their own troubles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Nadia, we learned definitely in the back half of the episodes, like, there's a really complicated thing with her mother, and her mother is dead, and she blamed herself for the death of her mother, who's played by Chloe Sevigny in some flashbacks. And so it's kind of her coming to terms with a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And with Alan, it's his central thing seems to be his girlfriend, Beatrice, who has been cheating on him for like 9 years
right.
or something.
I think they've been together for 9 years. I don't think she's been cheating on him for 9 years.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I think that his thing was just the realization that like she cheated, I guess, because she wasn't happy with him because he was, you know, acting strangely, whatever, obsessed, whatever. So I guess he's realizes that and that is what he will change moving forward. Which was like, there was obviously less of a focus on his thing than Nadia's, right? So we don't know the full extent of it, but from what I gather, that was really the extent of what kept him in the loop, right?
Yeah, they don't go super deep on that stuff. It was more like, there's a scene where he talks with the guy, because the guy that is cheating, or you know, sleeping with his girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
is at the party, at Nadia's birthday party. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of central to both of their things. And the guy tells Alan, like, hey, man, you were not making her happy. Mm-hmm. Like, this is kind of on you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of him accepting his own part in the unhappiness that Beatrice has. And Beatrice also does not want to break up with him because she's afraid for his mental health.
Right.
And that is how he dies the first time. Because whereas Nadia gets hit by the taxi looking for the cat, he kills himself. He gets, like, wasted. And actually, looking back at that first episode, I saw that Netflix tweet, but the only time I remember seeing him in the mm-hmm. first one was when he comes into this deli. Mm-hmm. Deli is kind of a central area in the show. And he's just, like, wasted and being weird and, like, dropping food all over the floor and stuff. But I don't remember seeing him elsewhere. Do you?
No. I mean, I can't say, really, because he's pretty nondescript looking. I'm sure I did see him at some point, but I didn't recognize him until, we got to know who he is.
Yeah.
So as these timelines go on, while basically everything's the same, there are certain things that they notice is changing. For example, the fruit seems to be rotting. Eventually, there are fewer people. Eventually, there's barely anyone. Like, so these people are disappearing. They realize that their time is almost running out.
Is that what that was representing? Is that, like, the time wasn't going to go infinitely? Like, the people disappearing and the fruit rotting and all that? Because I was never quite clear on what that was.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was just this loop just continuing and degrading as it went along.
Yeah.
Who knows what it would culminate in?
I think there are a couple times they try to explain it, mm-hmm. and I think it just kind of confuses things more. Like, I think the fruit thing is kind of confusing, and then she tries to use some, like, video game analogy thing about, like, bugs and crashing and stuff that, like, I don't think it was necessary, really.
Well, I think that what she was trying to say, or what she said, rather, is that, like, there was something where essentially, like, fate dictated a certain thing to happen and it didn't happen. So that was the glitch that caused this to break, that caused the, like, space-time continuum and, like, all these universes to happen. And that moment was when she was supposed to save him when he was drunk, and she didn't. She chose to berate the Wall Street guys instead.
Right.
And for him, it was when she went home with Mike.
And he just, like, should have known that that was just a bad decision and stopped her or something? Is that right?
Well, I mean, she got hit by a car, so I guess, like, he just didn't want her to go because then she might get hit by a car or something.
Okay. So it is kind of, like, in the same way a Groundhog Day, as far as, like, it's this personal growth thing,
mm-hmm.
where a lot of it seemed to be about getting over, like, the demons of the past, mm-hmm. and not just, like, the initial, like, oh, I didn't help this person when they needed a hand or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was also, like, getting over, like, Nadia's stuff with her mother, because mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that you see represented in the timelines, like, mirrors start disappearing, and that is implied that it happens because there's a flashback where her mother is just, like, in a fit of rage going nuts, like, smashing, like, all these mirrors on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And so that somehow manifested. And, like, this stuff, like, timeline-type stuff is always very complicated to make sense of and to talk about, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's always very, very complicated, I find, especially ones with, like, a bunch of different ones like this,
right.
instead of just, like, a Terminator or Looper thing where it's like, well, they went back in time and whatever.
Right, yeah. I mean, because especially when there's timelines in, like, some kind of story, narrative, whatever – whenever timelines are brought up, there's always one anchor that can somehow, like, one character, central character usually, that can, like, go through the timelines and try and remember what that person witnessed and has been through in this new context, which is, like, a universe that doesn't know or isn't affected by their previous actions.
Right.
It's very hard to keep track of, you know, what, if any, consequences there will be, like, what actual things they learn from the previous universe, what is actually, like, happening, what is the linear timeline, because, like, they talk about the linear timeline in this one being the timeline in which the exterior of the fruit is rotting despite it being ripe on the inside.
Right.
So I think that's talking about, like, the convergence of the timelines. There's the one timeline, the initial one in a universe where they both died, and then there's this one that's happening now, which it's so new, the fruit is still ripe. I mean, that's the one that they just reset, right?
Okay, yeah.
So they are the anchors in those universes. And I guess to some extent, the exterior of the fruit is too, because it's along for that path.
So it's kind of symbolic, but also it's kind of playing on this weird timeline stuff.
Like, I think so.
It's complicated.
It is complicated. But this show is great because it was kind of complex as these timeline stuff can usually be. But it was really fun.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun, especially, those first episodes are very breezy and funny and everything. But mm-hmm. then, even though a lot of the stuff is complicated near the mm-hmm. end, I think you get the basic broad strokes of, like, mm-hmm. they need to get better as people and be less selfish and help out the other person when they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
They also need to get over their own things, their relationships, both with their dead mom and with their girlfriend. And then they wind up together, but mm-hmm. in two different timelines,
right.
where one of them is where, like, it's like fresh for, God, it's so hard to even describe this stuff. There's one where Nadia remembers everything, and Alan is just like, what are you talking about? I don't know you. Right. And then there's one where it's vice versa, and they have to kind of, like, do the thing where they convince each other, like, oh, how do you know this number? Mm-hmm. How do you know this thing? How do you know so much about me? And then they both kind of, it's implied that they come together at the end, and then there's this very odd, surreal, like you mentioned the parade earlier. Yeah. I don't know if that was necessarily meant to... I don't know what that was supposed to represent necessarily. Right. Like you mentioned the cat stuff. I read some interviews where like the creator of the show was kind of hesitant to like, didn't want to say, oh, this is what it was and preferred, you know, for the everyone's interpretation.
Did you notice that the timelines in which there are two timelines, one where Nadia knows what's going on, one where Alan knows what's going on at the end, smart Nadia and smart Alan converge and they're in the same timeline now? Because a smart Alan has that scarf on that the girl at the party put on him. Smart Nadia is wearing that white shirt with the big bow.
She hasn't taken the stuff off because she didn't sleep with the guy. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So those two versions are the ones that know what's going on. And then at the end, they're both walking side by side.
There was the thing where you see the two Nadias when during the parade and then they kind of come together. I guess I didn't realize that, like, did they fix everything there and brought the two timelines together by doing that?
I guess so. I mean, that has to be why they would make the, you know, clothing choices, the different clothes.
That's true. Because I noticed the clothing thing, but only in the way that I thought it was smart. That, like, oh, this is to easily let the viewer know that this is the new, confident, smart Alan.
Scarf. And it was. I mean, that's exactly what it was.
I just didn't do the connection that at the end they were both the, like, you know, smartened up versions.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I was kind of worried at first that it was going to be just kind of like another basic, like almost a ripoff of Groundhog Day. But you learn within the first episode or two that it is totally
different. But I'll be honest, even if it was like a direct ripoff of Groundhog Day, I wouldn't mind that, because Groundhog Day, the movie, you get to know this day so well and all the possible outcomes that could possibly happen. And if there was a different day in a different place, New York City, to see all the different outcomes that someone could do on the same night, I would love that. I feel like if it was going to happen, New York City would be the best place for it to happen, because every day you could go down a different path and see, like, oh, fuck, I had no idea this was happening in this weird basement in the East Village or whatever.
Yeah. It would be a blessing for a long time before it became a curse. And so as long as you've got like a big off switch, it's like, yeah, sign me up for that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Imagine all the amazing food you could eat without having to worry at all. Because it's like, oh, I'm going to be.
they make good use of New York City here. And actually, several months ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tell them.
Yeah. I was walking around. Actually, I was walking around the city trying desperately to find a bow tie for a thing at work where I had to dress up like James Bond for this thing at work. And I was just walking all over the place. And
totally
then like, a block from my work, I looked over and there, you know, we see film shoots pretty frequently here in Manhattan. And I was kind of just glancing, seeing if I noticed anyone or could tell what show it was. And I saw Amy Poehler. I was like, oh, what the hell? Oh, holy shit, that's Amy Poehler. And I stopped for a second. I watched a little bit. And thinking back, I do think that I saw like I remember a girl with big red hair. And so I'm almost certain they must have been filming, because they filmed all over New York for this thing. But they do a great job. You know, I was worried that the shtick would run thin of just like when they first introduced the Nadia character, it's very much like, yeah, I love drugs and fighting and fucking. And, you know, it's very much like, oh, is this going to get grating? But it's actually endearing.
You made her sound like a pirate. Like,
yeah, or, you know. I think it's an endearing character. Mm-hmm. And they kind of go into that where she's got this like gruff exterior, but she's actually like really got this, you know, trauma and everything in her past. And Natasha Lyonne, awesome. She's great in this. And the guy who played Alan did a great job of he really did seem like super high strung. Overall, yeah, I liked it a lot. I think it really did a great job of mixing the comedy with the cool concept. Like, it made good on that concept, and it differentiated itself from Groundhog Day. Like, that's a really fun concept, the Groundhog Day thing. So to see another take on it, it felt pretty wildly different and got way more serious than Groundhog Day ever did.
Yeah, I agree. And I liked that it kind of closed the loop at the end in that I can't see them doing a season two. It seemed like it's all pretty much a self-contained thing.
The thing I read said that they were talking about 3 seasons.
Really?
Yeah, and like they haven't confirmed that the second one is going forward yet, but that, like, initially when they were talking about the show, that it would be 3 seasons.
It seems like Natasha Lyonne is a big part of the staff of the show beyond just starring in it. So with that in mind, I would think that she would star in these coming seasons as well. But I would like it better if they focus on someone else's, like, repeated loop scenario. I want to see someone else's day in life and learn about someone else in this context.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe a season 2 could go way deeper on Alan. Who knows? Yeah. Or a new character entirely that comes into the mix. But even in all the periphery characters, I thought were great. Really great cast. So Overall, yeah, I feel really positive about it. I mean, it got a little complicated at the end, and they kind of explained it in some weird ways. But also, it's the first time I've seen Uncle Polly from the Rocky series in a very long time, and I didn't know if that actor was alive anymore. I think his name might be Burt Young, or I could be totally wrong. But he was one of my favorite characters in Rocky, and I hope him and his robot girlfriend are doing great. Yes. So yeah, that's pretty much it for Russian Doll.
Indeed.
I think thumbs up from both of us
here. I recommend it. Yes, very nice show to watch. It's not one of those shows that you can watch casually because you kind of have to follow what's going on.
Yeah.
But it is an easy show to watch for sure.
It's very breezy. Again, yeah. The length and the pacing, I think, mm-hmm. really help with both mm-hmm. of those. So yeah, big thumbs up there. And as far as other recommendations.
Indeed.
Do you have any this week?
Sure. I have a recommendation.
What's your recommendation?
Speaking of robot girlfriends,
yes.
Last night I watched Ex Machina, and it was fantastic. It's, again, like really smart AI, the whole shtick, but it's really well done and very space, or 2001 Space Odyssey in some ways. I thought it was really cool. It wasn't at all what I expected.
It's by the director of Annihilation, right?
Right.
Which, that, I don't know if we were super hot on it when we first saw it, but I don't know about you, but like, I remember, like, the more I think back on it, I'm like, that movie was pretty cool.
I think what happened was I went in with extremely high expectations because we had been hearing so many good things about it. I expected my mind to be blown, and it was really good, but it didn't stay with me at all.
Yeah.
I thought it would,
yeah.
But it didn't. Maybe I have to watch it again. I don't know.
Well, I'm really glad that you liked Ex Machina. And actually, you mentioned that you would watch it again. Mm-hmm. And I would totally watch it with you sometime in the next couple of days here.
Awesome.
I would love to check it out. My recommendation, I'll say today, I cleared some space. My Blu-ray cabinet was getting a bit filled up. And so I thought, hey, I'm going to do a Goodwill run. And I just went through some stuff, took a big box of stuff, and it feels real good to isn't decluttering a big thing now? There's the Netflix show with Marie Kondo now.
There is that show. You read the book, didn't you?
I started that. Tim Curry recommended it to me, and I started that. And yeah, it's really good to just kind of get rid of some shit. So hey, if you got a nice weekend day with nothing planned, grab a cardboard box, throw a bunch of shit in it, get rid of it.
Yeah, it does feel good to tidy up your environment. Like I had, you know, we don't have a ton of space in our New York City apartment, so I kind of use all the space that I have. And I had a lot of stuff like piling up on my end table by my bed and stuff like that. So I just cleaned it up, and it does make you feel a lot better when your environment is clean. And, you know, I kind of do a clean of the apartment at least every 2 weeks, so
yeah,
it feels good. You should do it. You should clean. Mm-hmm. If you're sad and your environment is messy, try cleaning it. It might make you happy.
There you go. It makes a difference.
Yeah.
And speaking of making a difference, there are folks out there that make a difference to this podcast.
Oh, yes.
Folks. Yeah, fine folks. The best folks through our listener support program. And that is something, if you go to paintingthestream.com, you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month, or you can do it one time and cancel. That's totally fine. But yeah, if you want to do that, that kind of helps keep the lights on here, keeps us doing this for you. You know, we're going to keep doing it regardless, but we really do appreciate the people that chip in. So thank you to each and every person who supports us through listener support.
Thank you all.
Yes, and if you would like to give us any feedback or anything, or just know what's coming up on the next episodes, you can follow us at PanTheStream on Twitter, or you can email us, whatever you'd like to email us, at PantingTheStream@gmail.com. And that's it, right? Am I forgetting anything there?
No, I think you covered everything.
My post-pizza haze, I managed to get through, hit all the marks there?
You did.
Oh, man. Are you proud now?
A few stumbles along the way, but you've redeemed yourself. Yes.
Okay, thank you. This dog was pretty good, too, so I think we'll give him a treat.
He hasn't eaten his dinner yet. So
oh, maybe he'll get some dinner. Oh, he's at attention now. He is 100% at attention. But thanks to everyone. Thanks to Tom Mondo for the theme song.
Thanks, my bro.
Thanks to everyone listening and supporting. And thanks to you, Bunk, for doing this with me each and every week.
Thanks for being my life partner, my friend, best guy I know, sweet dude, great cheeks.
Whoa.
Little cute little cheeks, and you got a nose.
People are tuning out.
Bye.